here. Home run, Lenny Dykstra.
Stairs rips one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. It's wacky. Wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to a special Monday morning continued success, as John Stolness explained via Twitter. His explanation was internet gremlins, and we'll just stick with that based on the technical issues we ran into recording a typical episode, Sunday night episode of Hittin' Season with myself, Justin Clue, Liz Rocher, and John Stolness. Yeah, we ran into some problems and wound up tearing the episode in half. So you can listen to the recoverable segment we did last night on our Patreon at patreon.com/hittinseason. $5 gets you tons of bonus content every month. So that's a worthy investment. And over here on our main feed, we'd figured we'd give you the rest of the conversation this morning. John Stolness is out of pocket doing adult things this morning. And Liz and I are still here watching the sunrise at Hittin' Season Studios, as we always do, sitting in the corner like deactivated robots when we're not currently recording a podcast. So
Hittin' Season Studios. That would be awesome.
This is why I'm trying to stir that imagery in our listeners so they believe that that is the case. But, you know, when we outright say that it isn't, it kind of destroys that lie. But
Oh, well. Do you want to visit the Hittin' Season Studios someday, listener? Come join our Patreon. Only with you can we eventually get to that place.
Well, I'm Justin Clue of Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning. Don't we just love morning podcasts?
I love the science of podcasts. I love how all the audio connections and getting the cables in the right places and microphones that function and Wi-Fi that exists and things you pay for to be good that are not good for no reason. Definitely my favorite part of this entire process. Yeah.
I don't know what you want me to say about that.
Liz, expand on that.
I also enjoy cables.
Nice. Well, moving along. Last night we discussed Rhys Hoskins a lot. We talked about his role moving forward with the Phillies and what we should expect from him as far as the league-wide first baseman discussion and where he fits in that picture. We talked about a couple other things as well, but one of the things we didn't get to, and we'll get to in a second, is people on the Phillies roster who need to do a little better next year for the team to really be in the place they want to be in. People whose individual performance should really impact the team as a whole. I think there's a shortage of reliable performances on this team. The production you see from guys like Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto, I mean, you didn't even see it from guys like Aaron Nola the whole season like you wanted to. So I think there is a shortage of players who you can really rely on to give productive performances. So we'll talk about who are our top names on that list. But first, real quick, Liz, I wanted to talk about, two things that I saw this morning on MLB.com. First one is they had Will Leach write up a sentence on each Major League Baseball team with a prediction that, yeah, let's face it, is pulled from thin air. But I would like you to try and, this is the kind of stuff like the Red Sox. Mookie Betts isn't going to be on the Red Sox a year from today. Or for the Royals, Jorge Soler will hit 40 home runs. So it kind of runs the gamut of, star player is gone, or sure, let's have one person on this crappy team actually get the bat on the ball. What do you think his prediction was for your Philadelphia Phillies?
His prediction for 2020.
I'm having you predict a prediction.
My guess is that it's not good. That's my first assumption.
Interesting take.
Is it they will not make the playoffs for 2020? Is that the prediction?
It is that they miss the playoffs again. Yeah. Wow, you got that immediately. That's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, what can you really predict about the Phillies? Because they're so obviously trying to make the playoffs, but also so obviously don't have the team to do it. So,
is it a bolder prediction to say they won't make the playoffs than it is to say they will make the playoffs?
I think so. I mean, saying that they'll make the playoffs at this point is actually pretty bold.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's
why. Explain yourself.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So it is bolder to say they will make the playoffs.
Yes, I believe it is.
Gotcha. All right. Which is interesting because there was another MLB.com article that was, you know, they're running out. They clearly have an off-season winter content schedule plan, and they're just firing this kind of stuff out every day for us to talk about. And they did some power rankings to start the new year. And actually, I was a little surprised. First of all, the World Series champion Nationals are sitting at number 7 in the power rankings of all of baseball. So they didn't even get a write-up. Only the first 5 teams got, like, you know, a paragraph written about them. Which, by the way, the Nationals kind of fell. Not even for the Braves are a spot higher than the Nationals. Braves are 6 and 7. So first, I'm going to have you try to guess where the Phillies are as far as league-wide power rankings, and then I'm going to try to have you guess something else. So, yeah, league-wide, where do you think the Phillies stand as far as power rankings go right now?
Are they around the middle? I guess it's like 12, 13?
Yeah, you know, I would have guessed right around the middle as well, but this is what it was surprising to me. They have them at number 10. They have them in the top 10 in all of baseball, which, I mean, that's up from 16 the last time they did their power rankings at the end of the 2019 season. But that's above the Diamondbacks and the Cubs and the Indians. It's above the Red Sox. It's above the Brewers.
This is Allison Footer, who I don't know if she's their regular power ranker. Because some of this list doesn't quite make sense to me, like at all. Because I'm looking at it.
Well, now you're looking. You're ruining my next question.
I'm so sorry.
When you do this, when you go and find the thing that I'm talking about, why do you do this? I'm asking you to predict.
I'm a curious person.
I'm curious by nature, Justin.
Ask me anyway. I'm not looking at it anymore. I slipped through it.
No, I was just going to ask, who do you think the top 5 are? Because they aren't exactly who I thought they would be.
Well, it's the Yankees for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, the Nationals are at 7. The Braves, perhaps? Are they in the top
5? No, Braves are at 6.
Who the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to remember other MLB teams and who they are and what they do.
It's tough starting that engine this point
really
in the offseason.
It's the Yankees, Red Sox, probably not.
Nope.
Angels?
Nope.
Are there Dodgers? They exist.
Yes. The Dodgers are at number 2. I think you're going out of your way to avoid good baseball teams. But
I barely remember, like, most of these teams. All right, now I'm looking at the Astros exist. I remember that.
Right. And the last two are the Twins and Rays.
The Rays,
which
I get. The Twins, I don't.
This is, you know, the case of probably more subjective view of the person putting the power rank, which is fine. I think
it's
that's, you know,
fine.
Cool.
Look, that's the support
Let's
of
mix
power
it up
rankings.
A little bit.
I will say, at Yahoo Sports, MLB, my colleague Mike Oz does power rankings every single week. He bothers to give paragraphs to a lot more than just the top 5. This is lazy power ranking, everyone. This is, if you're going to bother to list 20 teams, you need to at least write up 10 of them.
Well, one of the things she mentions as far as the Twins being on this list, at number 4, by the way, they're not even number 5, is the acquisition of 2 starting pitchers in Rich Hill and Homer Bailey. Two deals that I don't think anybody, you know, outside of probably like Twins circles, maybe AL Central circles, really, you know, gave too much of a crap about.
Or is like excited these about. Like, Homer Bailey is kind of bad. It's not great. And Rich Hill isn't going to be back until the middle of 2020.
Is he in jail?
No, he had surgery on his arm. He had like alternative Tommy John surgery at whatever older age he is. So
was it Johnny Tom surgery?
I wish that's what it was. It's actually there is a pitcher over the last couple of years who was the first person to have it. I don't know why it's not named after him. But yeah, I don't understand why these two deals bring them to four.
Well,
that makes no sense.
It's not exclusively those two deals, but she brings them up and says that the duo provides veteran depth for the Twins, which could be advantageous down the stretch. I only bring this up because this is the kind of starting pitching world, and we kind of talked about this on the Hitting Season that's available on Patreon. This is the kind of pitching world the Phillies are living in. Like, do you think, how much better are the Phillies if they have acquired Rich Hill and Homer Bailey in addition to Zach Wheeler? Like, do you feel... It just kind of brings up that discussion of depth, and how is depth a strength if you're just really deep in pitchers who are recovering from surgery, or, you know, are lottery tickets, or, you know, have not looked good the past couple of years, or, you know, like, how is that really depth, or is it just warm bodies? Like, how can we really consider that a strength unless the players are good who you're filling out your roster with, including, like, the guys who are behind the other guys?
I think Rich Hill isn't a bad acquisition if he was going to be healthy for the whole year. So they essentially just picked up a guy. They essentially just signed a guy at the All-Star break is what they did. They just did it early. If the Phillies had acquired these guys, I wouldn't feel great about it, but I would probably feel a little bit better than I do now, because I don't think they have a lot of depth.
it's a very Phillies acquisition.
It
honestly.
Is, yeah.
Like, it sucks that I think that I see those two guys getting brought in anywhere, and I think, like, oh yeah, Phillies would have made that deal. I mean, go ahead.
I would say these are names that we know, and I think that's where the Phillies tend to, they're just like, who is the least known guy that we can get something out of? That's how I feel like they've operated, because... Like, Rich Hill and Homer Bailey are guys who've had success in the past. Homer Bailey's thrown a no-hitter. So, not that that's, you know, a huge accomplishment on the whole, but, you know, these are dudes that were once pretty good. That's kind of why I feel like the Phillies might not make this deal. I feel like they might be out of their league somehow. That says nothing. I mean, we've talked a lot on the podcast over the past few weeks about how negative we've been, and we say that, and then we immediately start being negative again because there's no other place to go. Like, we're sorry that we have to be this way, but when you talk about the Phillies 2 to 3 times a week, you know, you're going to get down to the nitty gritty level of why are they doing this? And that is the question that you ask about every move they make these days.
Well, something I wanted to bring up actually on that note is that, you know, the Phillies ended the last two seasons with this very decisive kind of like breaking point, you know, maybe not quite in the middle, but I think we would all agree that they started off very strong, that they spent some time in first place. And it was always the second half of the season in 2018 and 2019 that saw them falter, plummet, and, you know, no longer be a part of the playoff picture. Sometimes you could see hints of that beginning, but, like, you know, the start would have been strong enough that you're like, okay, this team can pull out of this. This isn't that big a deal. But there were, you know, there were definitely moments where it was like, oh, this team's dead in the water in the second half. And I think that sort of negative energy that you go as a fan, you go into the offseason remembering that. You're not really thinking as much about the positive hot start because that's much further away. And so those two things have come to define the team. So when you look at the MLB standings from last year, or the year before, you know, I was trying to find a team that had like a similar ending to the Phillies. They were the only 81-81 team in baseball last year, which isn't like, you know, crazy. It's just, you know, you think about a 500 team doesn't seem super uncommon, but a team finishing like right at 500 is, I guess, you know, not a guarantee. But like the Mets finished 5 wins ahead of the Phillies last year, and people are, you know, lukewarm, I think, about the Mets. I don't know. Do you think people are more positive about them? Because what I was trying to do was find a team that had, like, a similar record in 2019 as the Phillies, but people were more positive about this offseason. Like, I kept coming back to the Reds, because the Reds finished significantly with a significantly worse record than the Phillies. Both teams were 16 games out of the division lead in their respective divisions, and the Reds have made moves this offseason. They've been somewhat aggressive. We've talked about that. They signed Mike Moustakas. They signed who else did they sign? They have Trevor Bauer from last year, Sonny Gray.
I was going to say Shelby Miller. I used to get the two of them mixed up a lot, and now I apparently still do.
Well, we were giving them credit for not doing nothing, for doing enough to keep people interested. Their outfield isn't great, but...
to win games.
Right.
Like, you don't have to win all the games or the most games, but you have to try to win games. And they're trying to do that. You know, they also hired, you know...
Wade Miley. They got Wade Miley.
There it is. You know, for better or for worse, they hired Kyle Boddy of Driveline, and he's been, and pitchers, you know, a subset of pitchers are very interested in what he has to offer. A lot of teams tried to lock Kyle Boddy down, and so the Reds are doing a lot, and some of it is stuff you don't see, but by convincing Kyle Boddy to work for them, you know, they made themselves a destination for pitchers. And even if it's not the top tier pitchers, you know, presumably those guys have at least figured it out and may not need Kyle Boddy. But, you know, a guy like Sonny Gray, Wade Miley, they are looking for ways to get better. And having Kyle Boddy there is certainly appealing. You know, why wouldn't Mike Moustakas want to go there if they're going to offer? I mean, they offered him all that money.
Yeah.
And I think he was a handful of years, too. Like, I don't know if he would have gotten that from anywhere else. Like, the Reds are a really interesting team.
And that's why I wanted to bring him up, because they, I mean, you look at the rotation, Luis Castillo, he was their all-star last year. And the depth chart has him listed as their number one starter. And behind him is Trevor Bauer, Sonny Gray, and Wade Miley. Joey Votto, who struggled last year, but is still Joey Votto. They got Mike Moustakas. Tucker Barnhart is an under-the-radar great catcher. Eugenio Suarez is having some effective year. So, like, they're not totally filled out, but they are a team that it's not doing nothing. And I guess my question is, not, you know, neither the Phillies nor the Reds are the topic of a lot of national conversation right now, but do you feel like people might be more positive? Do you get more positive vibes from people's discussions or mentions of the Reds than you do the Phillies? And if so, I feel like you could say it's because the Phillies finished so negatively. Our last memories of them aren't, you know, Bryce Harper's grand slam. They're the fact that they missed the playoffs when they should have gone, that they looked dead out there occasionally, that that their seasons are so defined by these second half plummets that just took them out of it. So I think in general, there is a more negative view of the Phillies because they haven't shown a reason to be too positive about them in the past 2 years.
Exactly. They need to show us something. Need to show us anything. Like, part of the problem is that they've set expectations, whether it was just by signing Harper on its own, which is setting an expectation. Like, you don't spend that much money on a player like Harper if you're not trying to make the playoffs, if you're not trying to eventually win the World Series. You know, you don't do that. So, like, their expectations have been set both in word and deed by the Phillies, and they haven't lived up to it. And that's part of the frustration that we're having is they say they want to be a World Series team. They want to be a competitive team. And it's obvious to everyone right now that they just don't have what it takes. I mean, I would love to be proven wrong. Once I start playing games that count, I want to be proven wrong. Prove me wrong. But I can only, you know, with my eyes and my brain, I can only say what I think and see. So
interesting.
I know, right? With the Reds, they haven't set those expectations. There aren't huge signings.
Yeah. And that's what was interesting to me. And I think that's it's a lot of perception. I don't think it's impossible, but, you know, again, thinking that the Reds could finish above the Phillies this year and thinking that that's not impossible is, I think, that's part of the more negative view that the people have of the Phillies right now. I think if we sat down with the goal of being positive about the Phillies, we would come out of that conversation feeling genuinely positive about them, because there's not no reason to feel good about the Phillies. But I think, yeah, I think the way their last two seasons have gone, when it felt like, okay, this is it, the turnaround is here. I think that has really gone a long way in casting this team in both, you know, its own fans' eyes, but also the national conversation. You know, we talked on Hidden Season about how the Phillies aren't listed among the links to any of the remaining key free agents. Part of that's because what we know about what they're planning, what their plans are in regards to payroll, but also because nobody's they're not making themselves a part of any conversation. They're not being too interesting, and that seems like that's probably part of the plan most of the time for these Phillies. They don't want you to know what they're up to. They don't want to look too interesting because they don't want too much focus on themselves. And I think that's all contributing to this overall kind of at best look at the Phillies. And the people who watch this team more, the people who watched very closely while they, fell out of playoff contention the past 2 years, are going to look at this team and be a little more negative about it. A, because of what we've seen the past two seasons, and B, because, in Philadelphia, that's whatever love looks like. When you kind of hate something enough to keep watching it. That's what love is around here. So, all right, we're going to get to our discussion over which individual players need to take a step forward in the next season in order to get this team where they want to go right after this first break. And we're back talking Phillies, talking 2020 Phillies, feeling good about them, talking about how good we feel about them. So in regards to the Phillies taking steps forward, we want to obviously see them take the next step in 2020, the same step they've tried to make in 2018, then tried again to make in 2019. This year, I think we got it.
Winning and, more than 81 games. Let's do it.
That threshold, it's tough for a team spending $200 million. But yeah.
How is it so hard?
In a couple of cases, we want to see certain players take the next step. In some cases, they've been taking steps. In some cases, they've stalled out. In some cases, it was not their fault. In some cases, it was the team's fault. Different cases across the board. But as I said at the top of the show, I think this team has a shortage of productive players that it can rely on to be productive. And that's who we're not going to talk about in this segment. Liz, I don't know about you, but how long your list is, but I have a couple of guys I want to mention in this regard. Both, they all kind of fell out different subcategories of the let's see a little more from these guys tab. So why don't you go first? Who is somebody on this team, on this roster now, who is going to be on the roster opening day, who is going to play a key role, from whom you feel like you've got to see more in order for the team as a whole to find success?
I will steal one of your picks, I'm sure. Rhys Hoskins is at the very top. Aaron Nola is also a candidate for this for me, but, we know what he can do, and I have confidence that he'll make it back there. Rhys Hoskins has been struggling for over a year, over a season, and it's really tough to see because he started so fast and so big. We know he has a lot of power. He just hasn't been able to put it all together yet. But if he has a crappy year, the Phillies are in trouble. The Phillies are in trouble because it's not hard to find a decent hitting first baseman. They're everywhere. And if the Phillies don't have one, they need to get one. So Rhys Hoskins if the Phillies are going to do better, Rhys Hoskins has to be better on the whole defense and offense for sure.
Yes. No, I totally agree. I think he would be at the top of the list since I left him off mine, not because I don't agree with you, but because, I assumed that would come up pretty quickly because Hoskins' role is very central. I think they believed they could rely on his production early on. I don't remember the reputation of him being as streaky as he's been at the major league level when he was in AAA, but then again, we were probably getting a lot of the reporting that was just on him and Dylan Cousins like absolutely murdering baseballs that one season. I don't know if there was like a full-on analysis of his approach at that point. So I don't know if he came up with that kind of reputation, but it's definitely come to define his big league career, and I think that's not the definition the Phillies wanted. It's certainly not the definition that the fans wanted. It's probably not the definition Rhys Hoskins wanted either. So yeah, I think definitely seeing more from him, somebody who has like kind of stepped into that leader role, but who has not really produced on the field as a leader. I think that's an obvious move or an obvious development that the team has to see in order to get where they want to go.
Yeah. My hope is that it's all coaching and then he comes in and there's no Gabe Kapler and none of those dudes. And he's just like, oh, I remember how to do this now. That's my hope.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he just kind of like we'll hear one of those stories where he just like spent a bunch of the offseason in like an old barn in a field swinging at like a tennis ball dangling from the rafters. And like, you know, it's like just like my dad and I used to do, it's like Rhys Hoskins goes back to base. You know, see some kind of narrative where he like went out in the desert and flipped a giant tire around a bunch of times, came back and like, I know how to do this again. I can
like
do it.
Rocky training montage.
Right, just something like that. I think he's one of those away from being the kind of hitter he can be, because that's the difference. And I think that's what makes him the prime candidate for a discussion like this, is that we know how good he is and we know how good he can be. We have a pretty clear picture of that. And yeah, you can counter that with like, well, maybe this is who he is, but I don't think it is. And I think anyone would agree that as streaky as he's looked, Rhys Hoskins is certainly not the player who ended the 2019 season, the last 2 months of that season when he actually absolutely brutal stretch. I don't think anybody thinks that is the real Rhys Hoskins.
Oh, and, God, no.
Yeah. So I think we're going
to
see.
Too depressing to consider.
I think we're going to see a better Rhys Hoskins than that, because I don't think that was the real him whatsoever.
Yeah.
My first pick, I went with Scott Kingery.
I think he's always
been aggressive at the plate. He swings at a pretty average amount of pitches outside the strike zone, but he doesn't hit a lot of them. And we've seen this before, you know.
Exactly, we know what you want.
We know all too well how this story can end. An aggressive young hitter who never manages to get disciplined enough to improve. I'm not saying that's Kingery, but we've seen that kind of player come through the Phillies. We all know who I'm talking about. He plays for the Royals now. But Kingery took a giant leap from 2018 to 2019. His on-base percentage went up. His slugging percentage went up. He was worth like 2.7 wins instead of, you know, a negative amount of wins. His defense was tied for second in defensive war with Adam Haseley, behind only the Phillies' all-star catcher. So despite all that, Kingery's jump was from a low place in 2018. So I don't think it's putting too much pressure on him to take another step forward in 2020. The Phillies obviously saw enough talent in this guy to not only give him that infamous extension, but also make him this central cog in how their team is supposed to work by morphing him into a super utility player that gets more time and more positions than anybody. So clearly he factors into their plans in a big way. And three other players had at least 500 plate appearances and over 100 weighted runs created for the Phillies this year, and they are Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, and Rhys Hoskins. Kingery can get on that tier and live on that tier. He had 101 last year. He can get up there and live with those guys, I think. He doesn't have to be the team's best player or an elite player or the most powerful player or the most valuable player, but he can be consistently above average, I think. And I think it's fair to want or expect more from him, because I think the Phillies are expecting that too.
Yeah, I agree with that about Kingery. I'm looking at his blitz right now, because I remember I'm like, gosh, there were points last year he was so good. He had, let me see, he was great in March and April, he was great in June, he was great in August, and on those other months he hit under 200.
Yeah.
he hit 192 in July and 191 in September, October, and that's not good. Those are not good. And those were enough to significantly drag that batting average down. I mean, at the end of April, he had played just 14 games. He had 406, 457, 719 triple slash. Like, that's nuts. And so he definitely can't keep that up. But it would be nice to see him find a middle where he's not hitting under 200 for, you know, 2 months out of the year. He definitely needs to find more consistency. And I pray that someday he'll find it, because it certainly won't be. The Phillies won't give it to him.
Yeah.
The Phillies are never going to give it to him. And so he has to find it himself, because he's always going to. Because that what? Once, what's his face? Good God. Alec Bohm comes up to play third, which we all assume that he's going to wear. What happens to Kingery? And if Kingery is hitting the cover off the ball once the Phillies can get, I mean, let's face it, once the Phillies can get an extra year of service time out of Bohm, that's why he'll most likely be kept down. Once he comes up, if Kingery's hitting the cover off the ball, what are they going to do?
Right.
And then I'm afraid, because we've seen this before, they will try and keep Kingery in the lineup and put him everywhere. And when they do that, they screw up Kingery and everyone else.
Yeah, I'm a little curious what the move is at that point. The Phillies have made, like I said, they've made Kingery pretty central to their plans. And and made it seem like they wanted him around for a while. I remember Matt Klentak saying when they signed him to that 6-year extension, you know, he forced their hand, that he had played well enough in spring training that they like had to give him a deal like that, which I remember
no, they
that
did not. They
I remember that seeming like very strong language. But hey, you know, this is the situation. The Phillies have like chosen him. And if he had not taken a significant step forward in 2019, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But, you know, there are guys who play the kind of role Kingery has. And while we might not have thought that process was super pleasant or made a lot of sense at first when the Phillies were trying to turn him from a one position guy into a Ben Zobrist type, if he is able to do that, you know, other guys have been able to do that effectively. And there's no reason he can't either. If he's shown this much progress thus far, he can probably show a little more and get on a level where he's a productive player who plays a bunch of different positions regularly. Maybe that's not how he plays forever. Maybe he's not with the Phillies forever. But if that's the way they see him, based on the progress we've seen from him thus far, there's no right reason why he can't do that. And if he can, then that makes him an even more valuable piece. So I don't think it's ridiculous to expect a little more from him. I think everyone is expecting to see a little more from him, and I hope we see it in 2020. Is there anybody else on your list that fits this description?
I would say, I mean, just to be sensible, it definitely has to be Aaron Nola. Like, he has to be a little bit more the pitcher. I mean, he's still the best starting pitcher the Phillies had last year, which is something. But he needs to be a little bit more the pitcher that we saw 2 years ago than the guy we saw last year, in order for the Phillies to be good, because they're just so thin at pitcher right now. They're just so thin. And they, if we're going to have more Vince Velasquez in the rotation, Aaron Nola's got to pick up the slack. There's no one else who can do it. He just has to be better. Please be better.
Honestly, I'm just staying out of, like, I stayed away from pitching because the Phillies have so much to figure out as far as pitching goes. Mm-hmm. And that's honestly the part that leaves you, I think, more downtrodden thinking about this team than the offense. I think the offense can wind up clicking, but pitching has a lot more to prove. And I don't think it's impossible that they prove that, you know, even if they are the middling rotation I think the Phillies were hoping to have last year, to be picked up by other strengths. Hopefully they've altered their approach a little bit going into 2020. But even if they pitch at that level, it would be an improvement on last year. So I stayed out of those waters because there's going to be so much like, well, hope that works the way it's supposed to going into the pitching staff. You just kind of hope Aaron Nola is the best pitcher on the team and that, you know, other people find a way to make it work. Because I think Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola could be an effective top two. But you know, as we've seen year after year, the best laid pitching plans, have not worked out for the Phillies necessarily. So, I agree with you, but yeah, I stayed away from pitching discussions cause it just worries me too much. I actually used Andrew McCutchen here. It's not that we need to see more from Kutch. It's that we need to see more of Kutch. We all know what the narrative turning point was for this team in 2019, and having McCutchen for a full season in the outfield with the swift and acrobatic Adam Haseley in center and, you know, the prowess and arm of Bryce Harper in right. I think Kutch slots in well. He fits in well with his team. He fits in well with the fan base, certainly. He fits in well in the lineup easily. Like Didi Gregorius, he's coming back from injury. But I think that's why his role is tougher, because he was an engine for this team. He was the best leadoff hitter. He probably still is the best leadoff hitter they have. He'll be coming back from a more devastating health issue than Gregorius faced. And when McCutchen went down, he was leading the league in walks. He was seeing like almost 4.5 pitches per plate appearance. He was what he was supposed to be by a large margin. And now we'll all watch him with bated breath and clenched butts, because Lord knows we don't want anything to happen to him. And because not only is he a lot of people's new favorite player and a delight to have around, but he's the best top of their most productive lineups. And apparently, seeing how they plummeted without him, he's the key to the whole thing working. So a full good year from McCutchen would be critical for this team. It doesn't take a lot of guts to say, boy, it would be great if Andrew McCutchen was healthy for a full season. And I certainly you don't blame him for his non-contact injury last year. But if you're talking about guys you want to see a more productive season out of in 2020, I think you got to mention him, because he's really central to this team's success. I don't know who's I think looking at the numbers and like just looking at just going back and watching the games where he was still the team's leadoff hitter, it's like it's undeniable how important he was.
Yeah. I mean, when you see what happened to the team when he went down, I mean, that was, you felt that like a punch in the stomach because he's just such a fun guy. And he's such a positive presence on the field and in the dugout. And I still watch that. I think there's an Instagram video of him dancing in the dugout, put to the, you know, here come the Sixers, which is, I love it so much. He's just such a great, he's such a great dude. And it's obvious that the Phillies all felt the same way, and not having him around was a big deal. So I'd like to see him back for the full season, not get injured, don't step in any gopher holes, you know.
Yeah. Undeniably, the Phillies need to stay away from any sort of holes. I think that's going to be their best friends moving forward. Lastly, I just wanted to quick note somebody else, new guy in town, you know, D.D. Gregorius. I mentioned him in my Andrew McCutchen discussion just then. But, the Phillies have another new infielder in town, and Gregorius is going to have a job to do this season, too. He's typically like a 2-3 win player. He hits home runs, he steals bases, he hits for average, and the Phillies aren't bringing him in to be platooned to death. So he's one of the two major moves they made and the only blockbuster position player they went out and got. So, you know, the pressure is on him, unfortunately. He's got a one-year deal because he's earning his way back, too, after missing a lot of last year following Tommy John surgery and struggling upon his return. But Citizens Bank Park is a great park for him to play in. He's hit 68 home runs since 2017. I think they've all gone to right field, so that porch should be nice to him. He can fit in a couple of spots in the middle of the order, and he hits the kind of hits this team has been missing for years. So, you know, he's just got to hit them for the Phillies' benefit and also his own. So they need to get the D.D. Gregorius to come out, who has been there prior to his surgery. Frankly, I don't think that's going to be too difficult to do. He was already showing shades of, you know, if the season had gone on longer, he would have been able to be more effective for the Yankees. But, you know, he's coming back from a health issue, and that really obviously screwed up his year. But I think this infield has been fluid. Infield has had a lot of questions over the past couple of years. Doesn't seem like everything's sort of locked in for the next few years, even at this point, but the Phillies got the guy they wanted. They got the guy that they felt would fit into this team and this infield. So I think it's a big year. It's a big year for D.D. Gregorius, like I said, not just for the Phillies to get what they want out of him, but also for him to get what he wants out of him, because he's on his way back. He's 30 years old. I think this was one of his first real health-affected seasons in 2019. So this is a big year for him, and I think getting a significant production from D.D. Gregorius would go a long way to getting this team to the top of the NL East. So I wanted to just check in on D.D. and mention that, yeah, he's got to play a big role this year too. But that's what I meant at the top. Like, this, you could just pick any of these guys really, and there was enough bad luck or poor numbers last season that you could point at just about anybody who's still on this team. If Michael Franco and Cesar Hernandez were still here, I'm not sure I would have listed them, because I think I would have known what to expect from them at this point.
Exactly.
Like, you could point at Franco all you want and say, like, this guy's got to step it up, but how many seasons in a row can we do that? So in that vein, it's almost encouraging that their time is over with the Phillies.
It is, and honestly. Like, I wish them both luck in the future, but, you know, good luck in the future somewhere else. I've had enough. Yeah. Once we finally offload dudes like, you know, Vince Velasquez and Nick Pivetta, we can all officially move on with our lives.
Yeah. So that's where we're at with the Phillies in early January 2020. Though it's much more winter left, much more offseason left. The Phillies will be a pipsqueak, but that's not the right word. Phillies will be what a whisper in the remainder of the offseason, it seems like. I don't think they're going to factor into too many national conversations, but any move they make, and a lot of the moves they don't, we will be sure to discuss on all of your favorite Phillies podcasts. They're a part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, Continued Success with myself and Liz Rocher, and The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. A new episode out right now, 90 minutes describing each of the worst innings from the last 10 years of Phillies baseball. It was a lot of fun. It's not hard to listen to. Maybe when you get an hour in, like, go take a shower, come back, listen to the last 30 minutes. But other than that, it's an enjoyable time. And we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.